Margaret had stopped beside her and was holding up her lantern.
"I am Lady Margaret Beck, daughter of the Earl and Countess of Goldenbirch, and these are Becklands. I shall brook no mischief in the Heathwood."
Margaret sounded firm, but Ian knew her voice well enough to hear the fear in it.
"Come forth and show yourself."
Now, Ian saw it. A figure stood between the trees, its features obscured by the oppressive darkness of the Heathwood. A drumbeat later, it had melted into the shadow, as if it had never been there.
"Did you see that?"
"I saw it," Ian said. A whisper of wind unsettled the trees. They returned to their horses, moving quickly now.
Ian buckled Ascalon onto the saddle.
The wolf moon was high over Goldenbirch. Its light glistened on the snow as they rode back to the corpse road. They had just passed one of the coffin stones that marked it when Ian heard a sharp cry from Margaret. She yanked the reins, turning her horse around.
"Meg!"
Her breath snared in her throat. The other horse was nowhere to be seen. And Margaret was standing, a blade at her throat, in the arms of the Witch of Inisca.
"This kind of magic is cold and elusive, graceful and slippery. It allows the wielder to cast illusions, control water, even to change their shape."
"Caliba," said Ead.
The witch was barefoot. She wore a diaphanous gown, white as the snow, which gathered at her waist.
"Hello, Eadaz."
Ead was tense as a bowstring.
"Did you follow me from Lassia?"
"I did. I watched you flee the Priory, and I saw you leave with the Innish Lord on the ship from Corvuga," Caliba said, expressionless. "I knew then that you had no plans to return to my bower. No plans to honour your oath."
In her grip, Margaret trembled.
"Are you afraid, sweeting?" Caliba asked her. "Did your milk nurse tell you stories of the Lady of the Woods?"
She slid the knife along the nut of Margaret's throat, and Margaret shuddered.
"It seems it was your family who concealed my sword from me."
"Let go of her," Ead said. "Her horse stamped its hooves. She has not to do with your grievance against me."
"My grievance?"
Despite the bitter cold, no goose flesh had risen on the witch.
"You swore to me that you would bring me what I desire. On this isle in ages past, you would have had your lifeblood spilled for breaking such a vow. How fortunate that you have something else I desire."
Ascalon was aglow again. Hidden under shirt and cloak, so was the waning jewel.
"It was here all along. In the Heathwood."
Caliba watched Ascalon.
"My sword laid to rest in dirt and darkness. Even if it had not been buried too deep for me to hear it calling, I would have had to crawl to it on my belly like an adder. Galleon mocks me even in death."
Margaret closed her eyes. Her lips moved in silent prayer.
"I suppose he did it just before he went to Nuertha, to his end."
Caliba raised her gaze.
"Hand it to me now, Eadaz, and your oath will be fulfilled. You will have given me what I desire."
"Caliba," Ead said, "I know I broke my oath to you. I will pay for it, but I need Ascalon. I will use it to slay the Nameless One, as Cleolin did not. It will quench the fire within him."
"Yes, it will," Caliba said. "But you will not wield it, Eadaz."
The witch threw Margaret into the snow. At once, Margaret began to claw at her own arms, and she retched as if there was water in her chest.
"Ead," she gasped out, "Ead the thorns! What are you doing to her?" Ead had dismounted in an instant. "Leave her be."
"Only an illusion," Caliba said, pacing around Margaret. "Still, I suppose mortals do tend to suffer in the grip of my enchantments. Sometimes their hearts give out through fear."
She held out a hand.
"This is your last chance to give me the sword, Eadaz. Do not let Lady Margaret Beck pay the price for your broken oath."
Ead stood her ground. She would not give up the sword. She also had no intention of letting Margaret die for it. The orange tree had not gifted her its fruit for nothing. She turned her palms outward. Magefire scorched from her hands and consumed both Margaret and the witch, burning away the illusion. Caliba let out a soul-wrenching cry, and her body contorted. Every orb and tress was cooked from her scalp. Flesh melted from her limbs and cooled again into pale lines. Black hair rushed and rippled to her waist. Aghast, Ead forced her hands to close. When the flames dwindled, Margaret was on all fours, one hand on her throat, eyes bloodshot, and Sabram Barethnet was standing beside her. Ead stared at her palms, then back at Caliba, who was also Sabran. Margaret pushed herself away. "Sabran?" she coughed out. Caliba opened her eyes, green as willow. "How?" Ead gasped. "How do you have her face?" She drew one of the blades. "Answer me, witch." She could not tear her gaze away. Caliba was Sabran, down to the tilt of her nose and the bow of her lips. No scar on the thigh or the belly, and there was a mark Sabran did not have on her right side under her arm. But otherwise, they might have been twins.
"Their faces are their crowns, and mine is the truth."
The voice from those lips belonged to the witch.
"You said you wanted to learn, Eadaz, that day in my bower. You see before you the greatest secret in Virtudom."
"You," Ead whispered. "Who was the first queen of Innis?" "This is no enchantment," heart drumming. Ead raised the blade. "This is your true form." Margaret scrambled to her feet and hastened to stand behind Ead, her girdle knife thrust out again.
"Truth you desired, truth you received,"
Caliba said, ignoring their blades.
"Yes, Eadaz, this is my true form, my first shape, the shape I wore before I mastered Steren."
She clasped her hands at her midriff, making her look, if possible, even more like Sabran.
"I never intended to reveal it. Since you have seen, however, I will tell you my tale."
Ead kept her gaze fixed on her. The blade angled towards her throat. Caliba turned her back, so she faced the moon.
"Galleon was my child."
It was not what Ead had expected to hear.
"Not a child born of my womb. I stole him from Goldenbirch when he was a nursling. At the time, I thought the blood of innocence might help me unlock a deeper magic. But he was such a charming baby, with his eyes like cornflower. I confess that I gave way to sentiment, and raised him as my own on Nurtha, in the hollow of the hawthorn tree."
Margaret was standing so close, Ead could feel her shivering.
"When he was 25, he left my side to become a knight in the service of Edric of Arendyne. 9 years later, the Nameless One emerged from the Dreadmount. I had not seen Galleon for many years, but when he heard of the plague and the Nameless One wreaking terror in Lassia, he sought me out again, pleading for my help. His dream, you see, was to unite the warring kings and princelings of Innis under one crown, and to rule a country according to the 6 virtues of knighthood. To do that, he had to earn their respect with a great deed. He wanted to slay the Nameless One, and to do that, he would need my magic. Like a fool, I gave it him, for by this time I loved him not as a mother. I loved him as companions do. In return, he swore he would be mine alone. Blinded by love, I gave him Ascalon, the sword I had forged in starlight and in fire. To Lassia he rode, to the city of Y'Kala."
She let out a huff.
"What I had not realized was what else Galleon wanted. To unite the Innisgan rulers and strengthen his claim, he desired a queen of royal blood. And when he saw Clearlind on Genyu, he wanted her. Not only was she unwed and beautiful, but in her veins ran the old blood of the South. You know a little of what happened next. Clearlin disdained my knight and took up his sword when he was injured. She wounded the Nameless One and disappeared with her handmaidens into the Lassian Basin, there to bind herself forever in marriage to the orange tree. I expected Galleon to seek me out, but he broke his promise and my heart. I was sick in love, and oh, I raged. She turned away. Galleon began his journey home without glory or a bride. I followed.
You do not seem the sort to resent being spurned, Eid said.
The heart is a cruel thing. His hold on mine was firm.
The witch paced around them.
Galleon was crushed by his failure, lost to hatred and anger. I did not know then how to change my shape. What I did know well was dreams and trickery.
Her eyes closed.
I stepped out of the trees in front of his horse. His eyes glazed over. He smiled and called me Cleolind.
Eid could not tear her gaze away. How?
I cannot tell you the mysteries of Starcraft, Eidaz. All you need know was that Steren gave me a foothold in his mind. Through an enchantment, I made him believe I was the princess who had rebuffed him. Half in dream, his memory blurred. He could not remember what Cleolind had looked like, or that she had banished him, or that I had ever existed. His desire made him malleable. He needed a queen, and there I was. I made him lust for me, as he had for Cleolind on the day he saw her.
A smile touched her lips.
He took me back to the Isles of Iniska. There he made me his queen, and I took him to my bed.
He was like your son, Eid said, disgust coiled in her belly. You raised him.
Love is complex, Eidaz.
Margaret pressed a hand to her mouth.
Soon, I was with child,
Caliba whispered. Her hands came to her belly.
Birthing my daughter took a great deal of my strength. I lost too much blood. Finally, as I lay racked with childbed fever, close to death, I could keep hold of Galleon no longer. Clear-eyed at last, he threw me into the dungeons.
Her voice darkened.
He had the sword. I was weak. A friend helped me escape. But I had to leave my Sabran, my little princess.
Sabran the first queen regnant of Innis. All the scattered fragments of the truth were aligning, explaining what the Priory had never understood. The deceiver had himself been deceived.
Galleon ripped down every likeness of me that had been painted or carved and forbade any more to be created for the rest of time. Then he went to Nurtha, where I had raised him, and hanged himself from my hawthorn tree, or what was left of it.
At this, the witch grasped her own arms.
He ensured his shame would go with him to the grave.
Eid was silent, sickened.
I watched a house of queens rise in his place. Great queens, whose names were known throughout the world. All of them had so much of me and nothing of him. One daughter for each, always with green eyes. An unexpected consequence of the Steren, I suppose.
It was almost too strange a tale to believe, and yet Magefire had not burned away that face. Magefire never lied.
You wonder why Sabran dreams of my bower,
Caliba asked Eid.
If you will not believe the truth from my lips, believe it from hers. My first blood lives within her.
You tormented her, Eid said, voice hoarse. If all of this is true, if all of the Berethnet queens are your direct descendants, why would you make her dream of blood?
I gave her dreams of the childbed, so she would know how I suffered birthing her ancestor. And I gave her dreams of the Nameless One, and of me, so she would know her fate.
And what is her fate?
The one I made for her.
The witch turned to face them then, and her face fractured. Her skin divided itself into scales, and her eyes became serpentine. The green bled into the whites and burned. A forked tongue lashed between her teeth. When the last piece of the puzzle fell into place, the very foundations of the world seemed to tremble beneath Iad. She was in the palace again, cradling Sabran, blood slippery on her hands.
"The white worm," she whispered. "That night, it was you. You are the sixth High Western."
Kaliba returned to her true, Sabran-shaped form once more, a faint smile on her lips.
"Why?"
Iad asked, stunned.
"Why would you destroy the House of Berethnet when you made it? Has this all been a game to you? Some elaborate revenge on Galleon?"
"I have not destroyed the House of Berethnet," Kaliba said. "No. That night, the night I struck down Sabran and her unborn child, I saved it. In ending the line, I earned the trust of Fyrdell, who will commend me to the Nameless One."
There was no amusement or joy in her now.
"He will rise, Eirdas. None can stop him. Even if you were to plunge Ascalon into his heart, even if the long-haired star returns, he will always rise anew. The imbalance in the universe, the imbalance that created him, will always exist. It can never be righted."
Ea tightened her grip on her sword. The jewel was icy cold against her heart.
"The Nameless One will let me be his flesh queen in the days to come," Kaliba said. "I shall give him Sabran as a gift, and take her place on the throne of Innis, the throne Galleon took from me. No one will know the difference. I will tell the people that I am Sabran, and that the Nameless One, in his mercy, has allowed me to keep my crown."
"No," Iad said quietly. Kaliba held out a hand once more. Margaret placed hers on Ascalon, still buckled into the saddle.
"Give me the sword," Kaliba said, "and your oath will be fulfilled."
Her gaze flicked to Margaret.
"Or perhaps you will return it, child, to undo the wrong your family did me by hiding it."
Margaret faced the Lady of the Woods, her childhood fear, and kept her hand on Ascalon.
"My ancestors were brave to keep it from you," she said, "and not for anything will I give it to you."
Iad locked gazes with Kaliba. She who had tricked Galleon the Deceiver, the White Worm, ancestor of Sabran. If she took the sword, there would be no victory.
"Very well," Kaliba said. "If we must do this the hard way, so be it."
Before their eyes, she began to change. Limbs stretched and bent on itself, her spine elongated with cracks like gunshots, and her skin was scrolled taut between new bones. In moments, she was as big as a house, and the white worm was before them, towering and terrible. Iad grabbed Margaret away just before razor teeth clamped around the horse, smothering the light of Ascalon. Leathery wings slammed down, bringing with them a hot wind. Horse blood sprayed across the snow as Kaliba launched herself into the night. As the wing beats faded into the distance, Iad slid to her knees, shoulders heaving. Spattered with blood, Margaret knelt beside her.
"There were thorns," she said, shuddering. In my throat, in my mouth."
"It was nothing real," Iad leaned against her.
"We lost the sword, Meg."
Her hands burned, but she kept them closed. She would need all her Sidon for the fight that was to come.
"It can't be true," Margaret swallowed. "All she said about the saint, the face she wore was trickery."
"I revealed it with mage fire," Iad murmured. "Mage fire is revelation. It tells only the truth." Somewhere in the trees, an owl let out a chilling scream. When Margaret flinched, dread in her gaze, Iad reached for her hand and squeezed it. "Without the true sword, we cannot kill the Nameless One. And unless we can find the second jewel, we cannot bind him," she said. "But we might be able to raise enough of an army to drive him far away."
"How?"
Margaret's voice was desolate.
"Who can help us now?"
Eared rose, pulling Margaret with her, and they stood in the red-stained snow beneath the moon. "I must speak to Sabran," she said. "It is time to open a new door."
Chapter 56. West. Loth had spent his morning writing to the Virtues Council, telling them of the imminent threat and calling them to Ascalon. It was an exhausting process, but since Satan Combe had been released and had taken over building a case against Igraine Crest, some of the burden was off his shoulders. Sabran joined him in the afternoon, a rock dove perched on her forearm, cooing. Its piebald feathers identified it as having come from Mentendon. "I have received a reply from High Princess Ermuna. She demands justice for the unlawful execution of Lady Trude." She laid the letter on the table. "She also says that Dr. Nicolay's ruse has been abducted by pirates and blames me for withholding his pardon for so long." Loth unfolded the letter. It had been sealed with the swan of the House of Llewellyn. "The only justice I can offer for Trude is the head of Igraine Crest." Sabran unlatched the doors to the balcony. "As for Ruse, I should have relented a long time ago." "Ruse was a swindler," Loth said. "He deserved punishment, not to that extreme." He sensed there was nothing he could say to deter her. For his part, Loth had never liked the alchemist. "Fortunately," Sabran said, "Ermuna has agreed, given the urgency of my request, to have the library of Ostendur scoured for knowledge about the reign of Empress Mokwo. She has sent one of her servants to find the records, and will send another bird with all speed when she has them." "Good." Sabran held up her arm. The rock dove hopped off it and fluttered away. "Sab?" She looked at him. "Crest told me something," Loth said, "about why she arranged for your mother to die. Say it." Loth let her have a moment without the knowledge. He tried not to think of how Crest had looked throughout the questioning, her disdainful gaze, her brazen lack of remorse. "She told me that the Queen Mother committed adultery with a privateer, Captain Gian Harlow." He hesitated. "The affair began the year before she became pregnant with you." Sabran closed the doors to the balcony and took the seat at the head of the table. "So," she said, "I may be a bastard." "Crest thought so. That was why she took such a great role in your upbringing. She wanted to mould you into a more virtuous queen." "A more obedient queen, a mannequin," Sabran said curtly, "to be manipulated." "Prince Wilston may have been your father." Loth placed a hand over hers. "The affair with Harlow might not have even existed. Crest is clearly not right in her mind." Sabran shook her head. "Part of me has always known. Mother and father were loving in public, but cold in private." She pressed his hand. "Thank you for telling me, Loth." "Aye." She reached in silence for her swan feather quill. Loth kneaded the stiffness from his neck and continued with his work. It was peaceful to be alone with her. He found himself glancing at his childhood friend, wondering. Had Sabran been in love with Llewellyn and turned to Eard for comfort after his death? Or had her marriage to Llewellyn been one of convenience, and it was Eard who was the root of her heart? Perhaps the truth was somewhere between. "I have a mind," Sabran said, "to make Roslane the new Duchess of Justice. She is heir apparent." "Is that wise?" When she only continued writing, Loth said, "I have been a friend to Roslane for many years, and know her devotion to you, but can we be sure her part in this was innocent?" "Combe is as convinced as he can be that she acted only to save my life. Her broken fingers are evidence of her loyalty." She dipped her quill in the inkhorn again. "Her grandmother will lose her head. Eard may have counseled for mercy in the past, but too much of it makes a fool." Footsteps approached from outside the chamber. Sabran tensed as they heard the clash of partisans. "Who goes there?" she called. "The Lady Chancellor, Your Majesty," came the answer. She relaxed a little. "Send her in." Lady Nelda Stillwater walked into the council chamber, wearing the ruby chain of her office. "Your Grace," Sabran said. "Majesty, Lord Arteloth." The Duchess of Courage curtsied. "I have just now been released from the Dern Tower. I wanted to come in person to tell you of my anger that a fellow duchess would rise against you." Her face was tight. "You have always had my loyalty." Sabran gave a gracious nod. I thank you, Nelda, and I am glad to see you released. On behalf of my son and granddaughter, I must also beg mercy for Lady Roslane. She has never spoken a word of treason against you in my presence, and I cannot think that she ever meant you harm. Be assured that Lady Roslane will be judged fairly. Loth nodded his agreement. Little Elaine, who was but 5 years old, must be worried for her mother. Thank you, Majesty, Stillwater said. I trust your verdict. Lord Satan has also asked me to tell you that Lady Margaret and Dame Eadaz arrived in Summerport at noonday. Send word that they should come to the council chambers as soon as they reach the palace. Stillwater curtsied again and went back through the doors. It seems Lord Satan has already returned to his role as your industrious spy master, Loth said. Indeed. Sabran picked up her quill again. Are you certain that he had no notion of this plot? Certain is a dangerous word, Loth said, but I am as sure as I can be that everything he does for the crown, and for the queen who wears it. Strangely, I trust him. Even though he sent you away, even though if not for him, Lord Kitson would still be alive. Sabran caught his gaze. I could still have him stripped off his titles, Loth. Only say the word. The Knight of Courage teaches mercy and forgiveness, Loth said quietly. I choose to take heed. With a small nod, Sabran returned to her letter, and Loth returned to his. It was late in the afternoon when a disturbance far below the tower made him raise his head. He went to the balcony and leaned over the balustrade. In the courtyard, at least 50 people, small as emmets from here, had gathered in the sundial garden, with more flocking to join them. I believe Eard is back, he grinned, with a gift. Gift? He was already halfway out of the council chamber. Sabran was at his side in moments, chased by her knights of the body. Loth, she said half laughing. What gift? You'll see. Outside, the sun was bright and heatless, and Margaret and Eard were at the center of a commotion. They flanked Arilac, who stood amid the curious onlookers with a sort of dignified exhaustion. When Sabran appeared, Eard curtsied, and the court followed suit. Majesty? Sabran raised her eyebrows. Lady Nirtha? Eard straightened, smiling. Madam, she said, we found this noble creature in Goldenbirch at the site of Berethnet Hearth. She placed a hand on the Ichneumon. This is Arilac, a descendant of the very Ichneumon who bore Queen Cleolin to Innis. He has come to offer his allegiance to your majesty. Arilac assessed the queen with his huge black-rimmed eyes. Sabran took in the miracle before her. You are most welcome here, Arilac, she lowered her head, as your ancestors were before you. Arilac bowed to the queen in return, his nose almost touching the grass. Loth watched how faces changed. To the people of the court, this was further confirmation that Sabran was divine.
I will guard you as I would my own pup, Sabran of Innis,
Arilac grumbled.
For you are the blood of King Galleon, bane of the Nameless One. I pledge my fealty to you.
When Arilac nuzzled his nose against her palm, the courtiers stared in reverence at their queen and this creature of legend. Sabran stroked between his ears and smiled as she seldom had since she was a girl. Master Wood, she said, and the pimpled squire in question bowed, see to it that Arilac is treated as our brother in virtudom. Yes, Majesty, Wood said, the knot in his throat bobbed. May I ask, what Sir Arilac eats?
Worm, Arilac said.
Sabran laughed. We are a little short of worm here, but we have plenty adders. Consult the cook, Master Wood. Arilac licked his chops. Wood looked queasy. Sabran walked back towards the shade of the alabastrine tower. Eard spoke to the Ichneumon, who nudged her with his nose before she followed. Loth embraced his sister. How were our parents? He asked. Margaret sighed. Papa is fading. Mama is pleased that I am to marry Lord Morwa. You must go to them as soon as you're able. Did you find Ascalon? Aye, she said, but with no joy. Woth, do you remember that Coney Hall I went down as a child? He thought back. Not that daft game we played as children. In the Heathwood, he said. What of it? She took him by the arm. Come, brother. I will let Ea tell you the unhappy tale. When they were all back in the council chamber, and the doors had shut behind them, Sabran turned to Eard. Margaret removed her feathered hat and sat at the table. You brought an unexpected gift. Sabran placed her hands on the back of the chair. Do you also have the true sword?
We found it, Eard said. It seems the Beck family has guarded it in secret for many centuries. The knowledge passed from heir to heir.
That's absurd, Loth said. Papa would never have kept it from his queens.
He was guarding it for when they needed it most, Loth.
He would have told you about it before you inherited the estate. Loth was thunderstricken. Removing her cloak, Eard took a seat.
We found Ascalon in a corny hall in the Heathwood, she said. Caliba appeared. She had followed me from Lassia.
The Lady of the Woods, Sabran said.
Yes, she took the sword from us.
Sabran clenched her jaw. Loth watched his sister and Eard. There was something odd about their expressions. They were keeping something back.
I suppose sending mercenaries after a shapeshifter would be an exercise in futility.
Sabran sank into the chair. If Ascalon is lost to us, and there is no guarantee that we will find the second jewel, then we must prepare to defend ourselves. A second grief of ages will begin the instant the Nameless One rises. I will invoke the holy call to arms, so King Rhaenys and High Princess Ermuna will be ready to fight. Her tone was even, but her eyes were haunted. She had more time to prepare than Glorian Shieldheart, who was 16 and in bed with a fever when the first grief of ages began. But it might only be weeks, or days, or hours.
You will need more than Virtudem to be ready, Sabran, Eard said. You will need Lassia. You will need the Aesir. You will need everyone in this world who can lift a sword.
Other sovereigns will not treat with Virtudem.
Then you must make a gesture of the love and respect you have for them, Eard said, by withdrawing the long-standing proclamation that all other religions are heresies. Changing the law to allow those with different values to live at peace in your realms.
It is a 1,000-year tradition, Sabran said curtly. The saint himself wrote that all other faiths were false.
Just because something has always been done does not mean that it ought to be done.
I agree. Loth had spoken before he knew it. The three women looked at him, Margaret with raised eyebrows.
I think it would help, he conceded, even as his faith groaned in protest.
During my adventure, I learned what it was to be a heretic. It felt as though my very existence were under assault.
If Innes can be the first to cease using the word, I think it would have done this world a very fine service.
After a moment, Sabran nodded.
I will put this to the Virtues Council, she said, but even if the southern rulers join us, I cannot see that it will do us much good. Iskallen has the largest standing army in the world, and that will be turned against us. Humankind has not the strength to resist the fire now.
Then humankind will need help, Eard said. Loth shook his head, lost.
Tell me, Eard went on, without explaining. Have you heard from High Princess Ermuna?
Yes, Sabran said. She will have the date for me presently.
Good. The Nameless One will rise from the abyss on that day, and even if we do not unite the sword and jewels, we must still be there to drive him away while he is still weak from his slumber.
Loth frowned.
To where?
And how?
Across the Halassa Sea, or beyond the gate of Ungulus. If evil must exist, let it not be in our bosom.
She looked Sabran in the eye.
We cannot carry out either of these plans alone.
Sabran sat back.
You mean for us to call upon the East, she conjectured, just as Lady Trude wanted.
An end to a centuries-long estrangement. Only Eard would have dared propose it to a Berethnet.
When I first learned of our plan, I thought Lady Trude reckless and dangerous, Eard said, voice tinged with regret.
Now I see her courage was higher than ours. The Eastern dragons are made of stern, and while they may not be able to destroy the Nameless One, their powers, however strong or weak, will help us drive him back. To split the draconic forces, you could also ask your fellow sovereigns to create a diversion.
They might well help, Loth cut in, but the Easterners will never parley with us.
Psyche trades with Mentendon, and the Easterners may help Innes if you make them an offer they cannot refuse.
Tell me, Eard, Sabran looked unmoved, what should I offer the heretics of the East? The first alliance with Virtudem in history?
The council chamber fell silent as a crypt.
No, Loth said firmly. This is too much. Nobody is going to stand for this. Not the Virtues Council, not the people, and not me.
You just now advocated for us to all stop thinking of each other as heretics. Margaret crossed her arms. Did you bang your head without my noticing in the last few minutes, brother?
I meant people on this side of the abyss. The Easterners venerate worms. It is not the same, Meg.
The Eastern dragons are not our enemies, Loth. I used to believe they were, he had said, but I did not understand the duality our world is built on. They are opposite in nature to infernal things like Fyrdael.
Loth snorted. You begin to sound like an alchemist. Have you ever met an Eastern worm?
No. She cocked an eyebrow. Have you?
I do not need to meet them to know that they have forced the East to worship them. I will not kneel at the altar of heresy.
They may not force worship, Margaret mused. Perhaps they share a mutual respect with the Easterners.
Do you hear yourself, Margaret? Loth said, appalled.
They are worms.
The East also fears the Nameless One, Ead said. Each of our religions agrees that he is the enemy.
And the enemy of the enemy is a potential friend, Margaret agreed.
Loth bit his tongue. If the foundations of his faith were struck once more, they might come tumbling down.
You do not know what you ask, Ead.
When Sabran spoke, her voice sounded too heavy to lift.
We have kept our distance from the East because of their heresy, yes, but to my understanding, the Easterners closed the door first, out of fear of the plague. I will not be able to persuade them to join us without making them a very generous offer in return.
The banishment of the Nameless One will profit us all, Ead said.
The East did not escape the grief of ages, and it will not escape this.
But its people might buy themselves time to prepare while we lay our heads upon the block, Sabran pointed out.
A bird landed outside.
Loth glanced at the balcony, hoping to see a rock dove with a letter. A crow looked back at him.
I told you that even the countries of Virtudom would not come to the aid of Innis if their own shores were under attack, Sabran said, too concerned with Ead to notice the bird.
You looked surprised.
I was. You should not have been. My grandmother once said that when a wolf comes to the village, a shepherd looks first to her own flock. The wolf bloods his teeth on other sheep, and the shepherd knows it will one day come for hers. But she clings to the hope that she might be able to keep him out until the wolf is at her door.
Loth thought that sounded like something Queen Gillian would have said. She had famously argued for tighter alliances with the rest of the world.
That, Sabran finished, is how humankind has existed since the grief of ages.
If the Eastern rulers have a whit of intelligence between them, they will see the necessity of cooperation, Ead maintained.
I have faith in the shepherds, even if Queen Gillian did not.
Sabran cast her gaze towards her own right hand, spread on the table. The hand that had once held a love knot ring.
Ead, I would speak with you alone, she rose.
Loth, Meg, please see to it that the summons go out to the Virtues Council at once. I need them all here to discuss the future.
Of course, Margaret said.
Sabran walked with Ead from the council chamber. When the doors were shut, Margaret looked at Loth with an expression he recognized from their music lessons. She had dealt it to him whenever he had hit the wrong note.
I hope you're not intending to argue against this plan.
Ead is mad to so much as insinuate it, Loth muttered. An alliance with the East is a remedy for misfortune. The crow took off again.
I don't know.
Margaret reached for a quill and ink.
Perhaps their dragons are nothing like worms. These days I feel obliged to question everything I've ever known.
We are not supposed to question, Meg. Faith is an act of trust in the saint.
And are you not questioning yours at all?
Of course I am, he rubbed his brow with one hand. And every day I fear I will be damned for it, that I will have no place in Halgallant.
Loth, you know how I love you, but the sense in your head could fit in a thimble.
Loth pursed his lips.
And you, I suppose, are worldly wise.
I was born worldly wise.
She drew a roll of parchment towards her.
Loth asked, what else happened in Golden Birch?
Smile fading, Margaret said, I will tell you tomorrow, and I recommend that you have a good, long sleep before you hear it, Loth, because your faith will be tested yet again.
She nodded to a pile of letters.
Be quick about it, brother. I must get these to the master of the posts.
He did as he was bid. Sometimes he wondered why the saint had not made Margaret the older child.
Night had fallen over Ascalon. Half of the knights of the body followed Ead and Sabran to the privy garden. but the queen ordered them to wait outside the gate. Only the stars could see them in the snow-draped dark. Iyad remembered strolling with Sabran on these paths in the high summer, the first time she had walked with her alone. Sabran, the descendant of Kaliba. Kaliba, the founder of the House of Berethnet. It had haunted her on the way back from Caliburn-on-Sea. It had haunted her as they rode to find Arilac, the secret that had divided the priory for centuries. Drunk on an enchantment, Galleon Berethnet had lain with a woman he had seen as a mother and got her with child. He had built his religion like a wall around his shame, and to save his legacy, he had seen no choice but to sanctify the lie. Tension poured from Sabran like heat off an open flame. When they reached the fountain, with its frozen rivulets of water, they faced each other. "You realize what a new alliance may entail?" Iyad waited for her to finish. "The East will already have weapons and money. I can add to those," Sabran said, "but remember what I told you. Alliances have ever been forged through marriage." "Alliances must have been mirrored without marriage in the past. This alliance is different. It would have to unite two regions that have been estranged for centuries, knit two bodies, and you knit two realms. That is why we royals marry. Not for love, but to build our houses. That is the way the world is. It does not need to be that way. Try, Sabran," Iyad urged. "Change the way things are." "You speak as if nothing was ever easier," Sabran shook her head. "As if custom and tradition have no hold on the world. They are what shapes the world. It is that easy. A year ago, you would not have believed that you could love someone you considered a heretic." Iyad did not look away. "Is that so?" Sabran breathed the white mist between them. "Yes," she said. "It is so." Snowflakes frosted her eyelashes and caught in her hair. She had stormed outside without a cloak and now held her own arms to keep in the warmth. "I will try," she concluded. "I will present this as a military alliance only. I am resolved that I will reign without a consort, as I have always desired. It is no longer my duty to marry and conceive a child. But if it is the custom in the East, as it usually is here, it may not be the custom," Iyad paused. "But if it is, perhaps you should reconsider your determination to remain unwed." Sabran studied her face. Even as her throat ached, Iyad did not break her gaze. "Why do you speak like this?" Sabran said quietly. "You know I never wanted to marry in the first place, and I am not inclined to do it again. That aside, it is you I want, no one else. But while you rule, you can never be seen with me. I am a heretic and..." "Stop!" Sabran embraced her then. "Stop it." Iyad drew her close, breathed her in. They sank onto a marble settle. "Sabran the Seventh, my namesake, fell in love with her lady of the bedchamber," Sabran murmured. "After she abdicated in favor of her daughter, they lived together for the rest of their days. If we defeat the Nameless One, my duty will be done." "As will mine," Iyad wrapped her cloak around them both. "Perhaps then I can steal you away." "Where?" Iyad kissed her temple. "Somewhere." Another foolish dream, but just for a moment she allowed herself to inhabit it, a life with Sabran at her side. "You and Meg kept something from me," Sabran said. "What happened in Goldenbirch?" It was some time before Iyad could bring herself to answer. "You asked me once if I knew who the first queen of Innis was, if not Cleolind." Sabran looked up at her. "My mother always said it was best to receive bad news in winter, when everything is already dark, so one can heal for spring," she said, while Iyad searched for the words. "And I must be at my strongest this particular spring." Faced with those eyes, the eyes of the witch, Iyad knew she could not withhold the revelation any longer. After 8 years of lies, she owed Sabran this truth. Underneath the stars, she gave it. Chapter 57. West. In an undercroft in Ascalon Palace, a murderer of hallowed blood awaited execution. Sabran, who had never shown bloodthirst in all the years Loth had known her, had decided she wanted crests drawn and quartered. But the other Duke Spiritual had counseled that her people would find it unsettling at such a fragile time. Best to make it quiet and quick. After a night of pacing the grounds alone, Sabran had relented, The cupbearer would face the block, and she would face it in private, with only a handful of witnesses. Crest showed no remorse as she looked at those who had come to watch her die. Rosalind stood to one side of the room, a mourning cap over her hair. Loth knew she was not grieving her grandmother, but the treachery that had stained their family name. Lord Calidor Stillwater kept a comforting hand on her waist. He had ridden from Castle Cordain, the ancestral seat of the Crest family, to be with his companion in her hour of grief. Loth stood close to them, arm in arm with Margaret. Sir Bran was nearby, wearing a necklace her mother had given her for her 12th birthday. It was not customary for royals to attend executions, but Sir Bran had thought it craven to do otherwise. A low scaffold had been erected and draped with dark cloth. When the clock struck 10, Crest lifted her face into the light.
"I ask for no mercy and make no apology," she said. "Aubrecht Lievelin was a sinner and a leech. Rosarian Barethanet was a whore, and Sir Bran Barethanet is a bastard who will never bear a daughter of her own."
She locked gazes with Sir Bran.
"Unlike her, I did not fail in my duty. I served just punishment. I go willingly unto Halgallant, where the saint will welcome me."
Sir Bran did not rise to the taunt, but her face was utterly cold. A cousin of Roslane, also in a mourning cap, divested Crest of her cloak and signet ring and tied the blindfold over her eyes. The executioner stood by, one hand on the haft of the axe. Igraine Crest knelt before the block, straight-backed, and made the sign of the sword on her brow.
"In the name of the saint," she said, "I die."
With those words, she lowered her neck into the divot. Loth thought once more of Queen Rosarian and how her death had not been half as merciful. The executioner swung up the axe. When it fell, so did the head of the cupbearer. No one made a sound. A servant lifted the head by its hair and held it out for the room to see. The hallowed blood of the Knight of Justice trickled down the block, and a servant collected it in a goblet. As the body was shrouded and removed from the scaffold, the Crest cousin walked to Rosalind, who stepped away from her companion. The signet ring would usually be placed on the right hand, but the bone setter had splintered it. Rosalind held out her left hand instead, and her cousin slid on the ring.
"Here is Her Grace, Lady Rosalind Crest, Duchess of Justice," the steward said. "May she be rightwise in her conduct, now and always."
Igraine Crest was dead. Never again would the shadow of the cupbearer darken the queendom of Innes. Sir Bran sat in her favourite chair in the privy chamber. A lantern clock ticked on the mantelpiece. She had barely said a word since Iad had told her about Caliba. Once the story was finished, she had asked to go inside, and they had spent the rest of the night sealed behind the drapes of her bed. Iad had held her in silence while she gazed up at the canopy. Now she seemed fixated by her own hands. Iad watched her push her knuckles, roll the pads of her thumb on her fingers, and rub the polished ruby on her coronation ring. "Sir Bran," Iad said, "there is nothing of her power in you." Sir Bran clenched her jaw. "If I have her blood, then I could wield the waning jewel," she said. "Something of her lives in me." "Without a star rut or a fruit from the orange tree, you can use neither of the two branches of magic. You are not a mage," he had said, "and you are not about to turn into a worm." Sir Bran kept worrying at her skin with her fingernails. He had reached to cover her hand. "What are you thinking?" "That I am likely a bastard. That I am descended from a liar and the Lady of the Woods, the same woman who took my child from me, and that no good house could be built on such a foundation. Her hair was a curtain between them. That everything I am is a lie." "The House of Barethanet has done many good things. Its origin has no bearing on that." Eid kept hold of her hand. "As to your bastardry, it means your father is alive. Is that not good? I do not know Gian Harlow. My father, for all intents and purposes, was Lord Wilston Finch," Sir Bran said quietly. "And he is dead, like my mother, and Aubrecht, and the others." The grievous head had her in its vice. Ea tried to knead some warmth into her hand, to no avail. "I still do not understand why she put the barb in me." Sir Bran brushed her belly with the other hand. "If she speaks true, then she loved her daughter, Sir Bran the First. I am her blood." The barb itself had disappeared. According to the physician who had taken it, all that remained was a lock of hair. Caliba is divorced from her humanity now. You are her blood, but the affinity is not strong enough for her to love you. All she wants is your throne, Iad said. We may never understand her. What matters is that she is in league with the Nameless One, and that makes her our enemy. A knock came at the door. A knight of the body entered in her silver-plated armor.
Majesty, she said, bowing, a bird has just arrived from Brigstad. An urgent message from Her Royal Highness, High Princess Ermuna of the House of Lievelin.
She handed her the letter and left. Sabran broke the seal and turned to face the window as she read.
What does she say? Iad asked.
Sabran drew in a breath through her nose.
The date is...
The letter fluttered to the floor.
The date is the third day of this spring.
And so the sandglass turned. Iad had expected the knowledge to fill her with dread, but part of her had already known. The 1,000 years are almost done. Naporu and Clearland must have bound the Nameless One 6 years after the foundation of Ascalon. Sabran placed her hands on the mantle. We do not have long.
Long enough to cross the abyss, Iad said. Sabran, you must send your ambassadors to the east with all haste to make the alliance, and I must go with them to find the other jewel. At least then we can bind him again.
You cannot run blindly over the abyss, Sabran said, tensing. I must write to the eastern rulers first. The Sycanese and the Lacustrine will execute any outsider who sets foot on their shores. I must seek their permission to land a special embassy.
There is no time for it. It will take weeks for a dispatch to get there.
Iad made for the door. I will go ahead on a fast ship and...
Have you no care for your own life? Sabran said hotly.
Iad stopped. I spent weeks believing you dead when you left Ascalon. And now you want to go across the sea without protection, without armor, to a place where you could face death or imprisonment.
I already did that, Sabran.
The day I came to Innis, Iad gave her a weary smile.
If I survived once, I can again.
Sabran stood with her eyes shut, hands white-knuckled on the mantle. I know you must go, she said. To ask you to stay would be like trying to cage the wind. But please, Iad, wait. Let me arrange the embassy, so you have strength in numbers. Do not go alone. Iad tightened her grip on the door handle. Sabran was right. A few days of waiting would be time lost in the east, but it might also save her head. She turned back and said, I will stay. At this, Sabran crossed the room, eyes full, and embraced her. Iad pressed a kiss to her temple and held her close. Sabran had been dealt a cruel hand. Her lady of the bedchamber had died while she slept. Her companion in her arms, her mother before her eyes. Her daughter had never drawn breath. Her father, if he had been her father at all, had perished in Iskallen, beyond her reach. Loss had dogged her all her life. Little wonder she was holding on so tightly.
You remember the first day we walked together? You told me about the love, Jay, and how it always knows its partner's song, even if they had been long apart,
Iad whispered to her. My heart knows your song, and yours knows mine, and I will always come back to you. I will hold you to that, Eadaz Uknara. Iad tried to memorize her weight, her scent, the precise tenor of her voice, to lock her into her memory. Arilak will stay to guard you. It is why I brought him here, she said. He is a surly creature, but loyal, and he can tear through a wyvern well enough.
I will take good care of him,
Sabran drew back. I must meet with the remaining Duke Spirituals at once to discuss the embassy. Once the rest of the Virtues Council arrives, I will put this eastern proposal to them. If I show them the waning jewel and explain the significance of the date, I am confident they will vote in my favor. They will battle it to the end, Iad said, but you are golden-tongued. Sabran nodded, hard with resolve. Iad left her looking out over her city. She walked down a flight of steps and into the open gallery below the royal solarium, where 12 small balconies spilled winter-flowering blossoms. As she strode towards the door to her own chamber, she heard a footstep behind her, soft as felt. Silently, she turned. A red damsel stood in a beam of sunlight. At her lips was a blowpipe, whittled from wood. The dart had punched through her shirt before Iad could take a breath. Death spread from its bite. The floor met her knees with bone-jarring force. She lifted a shaking hand to her belly and felt the slender dart in it. Her killer caught and lowered her.
Forgive me, Iadaz. Night Rouge, he had coughed out. She had known this day would come. A sister of the Priory could avoid her wardings. The molten glass was setting in her veins, her muscles cramped around the dart, rejecting the poison.
You had the child, she managed to say.
Ochre eyes looked down at her.
A girl, Nairouge said, after a hesitation. I did not want this, sister, but the prioress commands that you are silenced.
Ead felt Nairouge twist the ring off her finger, the ring that had been her dream.
Where is the jewel? The white jewel?
Ead could not reply. The feeling was already trickling from her. She had the curious sense that her ribs were disappearing. As Nairouge felt at her throat for the jewel, Ead gripped the dart in her belly and removed it. She was so cold. All the fire in her was going out, leaving ashes in its wake.
Nameless is...
Even breathing was agony.
Spring. The third day of spring.
What is this? Sabran. Fear strained her voice. Nairouge moved like an arrow. Ead watched through watering eyes as her one-time sister pulled a band of silk across her mouth and bolted over the nearest balustrade. Footsteps clattered down the corridor. Ead! Sabran gathered her into her arms, gasping. Ead! Her features were bleeding together.
Look at me. Look at me, Ead, please. To tell me what she did to you. Tell me which poison...
Ead tried to speak her name. To say her name. Just one more time. To say she was sorry to break her promise.
I will always come back to you.
Darkness closed around her like a cocoon. She thought of the orange tree.
Not you. Ead, please.
The voice was fading.
Please don't leave me here alone.
She thought of how it had been between them. From the candle dance to the first touch of her lips. Then she did not think at all. The sun was setting over Ascalon. Loth gazed through the windows at the candle-lit alabastrian tower, where the Virtues Council were debating the Eastern proposal. Ead lay on her bed. Her lips were as black as her hair, her corset unraveled to reveal a pinhole in her belly. Sabran had not left her side. She was staring at Ead, as if looking away would snap her fragile hold on life. Outside, Arilak was prowling in the privy garden. It had taken a great deal of wheedling to convince him to leave for long enough for the royal physician to examine Ead, and even then he had snapped his jaws when the man had tried to touch her. Dr. Bourne moved like the hand of a clock around the sickbed. He measured her heartbeat, felt her brow, and studied the wound. When he finally took off his eyeglasses, Sabran raised her head.
"Lady Nertha has been poisoned," he said, "but by what I cannot tell. The symptoms are like none I have ever seen."
"The cruel sister," Loth said. "That is its name." It was supposed to cause death. Once again, Ead had defied her fate. The royal physician frowned at this.
"I have never heard of such a poison, my lord. I do not know how to purge it from her."
He looked back at Ead.
"Majesty, it seems to me that Lady Nertha has been put into a deep sleep. Perhaps she can be woken from it, perhaps not. All we can do is try to keep her alive for as long as we can, and pray for her."
"You will wake her," Sabran whispered. "You will find a way. If she dies..."
Her voice broke. She held her head between her hands and the royal physician bowed.
"I'm sorry, Your Majesty," he said. "We will do our best for her."
He retreated from the chamber. When the door closed, Sabran began to shiver.
"I was cursed in my cradle. The Lady of the Woods laid a hex upon my head."
She never took her eyes from Ead. "Not only is my crown lost, but my loved ones fall like roses in winter, always before my eyes." Margaret, who had been keeping watch on the other side of the bed, now went to sit beside her.
"Don't think these things. You are not cursed, Sab," she said gently but firmly. "Ead is not dead, and we will not mourn her. We will fight for her, and for everything she believes in."
She looked at Ead. "But I tell you this, I will not marry Tharion until she wakes. If she thinks this foolishness will get her out of giving me away, she is sorely mistaken." Loth took the seat that Margaret had quitted. He lifted his clasped hands to his lips. Even when she had been bleeding in Lassia, Ead had never looked this vulnerable. All life and warmth had fled from her.
"I will go to the east." His voice was hoarse. "No matter what the Virtues Council decides, I must go across the abyss as your representative, Sabran, to broker an alliance, to seek out the other jewel." Sabran was silent for a very long time. Outside, Aralak let out a chilling howl.